Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.
You're listening to a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. If you want to listen to us in real time, you can stream our show live weekdays at 11 a.m. Central. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
This is NPR News. I'm Stephanie Curtis in for Angela Davis today. This hour, we're talking about Senator Amy Klobuchar, the possibility that she'll run for president. But we'll start with today's breaking news story out of Wisconsin. 13-year-old Jamie Kloss has been found alive. Jamie's parents were shot in their home in October, and authorities have been searching for her since then with few leads. But today, she's safe.
For 88 days, I have stood before you and said we would work tirelessly to bring Jamie Kloss home. Today, I can report we have done just that. At this moment, Jamie is being in the comforting embrace of law enforcement as the investigation in her three-month ordeal ensues.
That's Barron, Wisconsin County Sheriff Chris Fitzgerald speaking at a press conference a short time ago. NPR News' Matt Sepik was there, and he joins me now. Hello, Matt.
Hi there, Stephanie.
So, Matt, where has Jamie Kloss been?
She was discovered about 70 miles north of here near the town of Gordon. That's in Douglas County. As we've reported, she escaped from captivity from a home there. She approached a woman around 4:30 yesterday afternoon who was out walking her dog. That woman took Jamie to a nearby house where another person called 911.
What did they say about Jamie Kloss's condition right now? And has she seen her family yet?
Well, physically, she is in good shape. As we reported this morning, she was unkempt and thin when she escaped from captivity. Sheriff Fitzgerald says Jamie has been cleared from the hospital and has been speaking with investigators. He says there's a reunification process going on, and they hope to have her back in Barron County this morning or early afternoon. It's not clear if she has seen her family members yet, but is certainly expected to shortly.
And what do we know about the suspect who's in custody? Has he been charged with anything yet?
He's 21 years old, Jake Thomas Patterson from Gordon, Wisconsin. He is unemployed. Fitzgerald said at the news conference this morning that Patterson has ties to the Barron area, but he wouldn't go into details about exactly what those ties are. The sheriff said Jamie was targeted for kidnapping, but it's still not clear how Patterson allegedly learned about her. Fitzgerald says social media, however, does not appear to be a factor. To your second question, Patterson has not been charged. He is being held here in Barron County on two counts of first-degree murder for the deaths of Jamie's parents. The district attorney said that he plans to file charges next week.
And are authorities looking for any other suspects at this point?
No, Patterson is it, and Fitzgerald says the suspect was not on investigators' radar. He and others at the news conference this morning credited Jamie with being courageous and saving herself and escaping from captivity. And, of course, the sheriff and others credited those two people in the town of Gordon who called 911 and alerted authorities. The suspect was arrested just a few minutes later.
Now, Jamie Kloss's parents were actually shot and killed that night in October. What did the sheriff say about what happened that night?
He didn't really get into any additional details about the killing itself and the initial crime that led to Jamie being kidnapped. He said investigators are certainly still out on the case serving search warrants. He did add, though, that the suspect took pains to avoid detection, both by law enforcement and the public.
What are the next steps for the investigation? What do they need to do?
Certainly, they are speaking with Jamie, and collecting additional evidence. As I mentioned, they're serving search warrants, presumably, on the home where she was found, and vehicles as well in the town of Gordon. And as I mentioned a little bit ago, the district attorney here in Barron County expects to file some charges next week.
All right, Matt, here's what the Barron School Superintendent Diane Trimbley said at the press conference.
It has been 88 days of hope for her safe return, 88 days of prayers for Jamie, her family, friends, our students, staff, and community, 88 days of holding on to the faith that our authorities would never give up, and they certainly did not. Finally, 88 days of our close-knit community with the same goal in mind, and that was to bring Jamie home and back into our arms.
So this is still a family tragedy, but with the silver lining that Jamie Claus is safe now, what was the mood of the press conference?
It was jubilant. Everyone who was standing behind Sheriff Fitzgerald was smiling. The rotunda of the courthouse was packed cheek by jowl with reporters and cameras and tripods. But there were a lot of people here from the community as well. They were crowded onto the staircase and the balcony above the rotunda. And at the end of the news conference, once the sheriff answered reporters' questions, there was a round of applause that broke out. So certainly a jubilant mood here, definitely a silver lining in really what has been an awful tragedy with the double homicide in October.
That's NPR News' Matt Sepik reporting live from Barron, Wisconsin, where the Barron County Sheriff has just wrapped up a press conference about Jamie Claus, who was found alive yesterday. Matt, thanks for driving out to Wisconsin and bringing us that report.
Hey, you're welcome, Stephanie. And I should add that Sheriff Fitzgerald has scheduled another news conference for 4 o'clock this afternoon, so we could get some more answers to some of those questions about the investigation at that point, and we will be here covering that as well.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Matt. You can hear later on All Things Considered special reports about what else we learned in the Jamie Claus case. And of course, go to our website, mprnews.org. We will be updating that consistently throughout the day. This is NPR News. I'm Stephanie Curtis, sitting in for Angela Davis. Elizabeth Warren has entered the race. Kamala Harris said this week that she will probably make an announcement near MLK Day. Kirsten Gillibrand might visit Iowa next week, according to Politico. And there are more than a dozen other possible Democratic candidates looking at the 2020 presidential race. Cory Booker, Beto O'Rourke, Joe Biden. Vox referred to the list as comically long. This hour, we're going to talk about the Minnesotan who is on that list, Senator Amy Klobuchar. If you voted for a Republican for president in the past, would you vote for Klobuchar in the 2020 race if she won the Democratic endorsement? For Democrats out there, what does Klobuchar bring to the table that the others don't have? Give us a call and join the conversation, 651-227-6000 or 1-800-242-2828. Again, 651-227-6000 or 1-800-242-2828. Joining me now in the studio are NPR News reporter Mark Zdechlik, who's been covering Klobuchar. Hi, Mark.
Good morning.
And Stephen Smith, political science professor at Washington University in St. Louis and an expert on Congress. Welcome.
Thank you.
Mark, why don't we start with something that might seem basic, but I think there are a lot of people who need to know a little bit more about Amy Klobuchar. What's her past? Where'd she come from?
Well, she was born in 1960. She grew up in the western Twin Cities suburbs. She's the daughter of the well-known newspaperman Jim Klobuchar. Her mom taught elementary school. Kind of in a nutshell, she's a wildly popular Minnesota politician who's very accomplished. She graduated from Yale and the University of Chicago Law School and worked as a corporate attorney in Minneapolis for a while. She kind of started dabbling in politics. She interned for Walter Mondale, too, back in the day. But she really kind of got involved in politics after her daughter Abigail was born with a serious health condition where her daughter was unable to swallow. And Amy Klobuchar at the time was told to leave the hospital after 24 hours. And she successfully lobbied for a law change at the state level to guarantee new moms 48 hours in the hospital. And that actually became a federal law change, too, under President Clinton. She decided to run for Hennepin County attorney in 1994, but then got out of the race when Mike Freeman decided he was going to run. She ran in 98 and served two full 4-year terms. And announced her Senate campaign in the spring of 2005 when it became clear that Mark Dayton, then Senator Dayton, would not be running for re-election. She was elected in 2006, becoming the first woman from Minnesota to be elected to the U.S. Senate. And she now is starting her third term. She won last November by almost 25 percentage points. And in a split state like Minnesota, that stands out nationally.
What has been her legislative hallmarks? What has she done?
Well, she regularly votes with Democrats on almost everything, although she aggressively promotes herself as a bipartisan politician who likes to work across the aisle. She's really known for successful consumer protection things she's done. You'll recall probably that she was behind a ban on lead in children's toys. She was behind better labeling of children's toys so parents can quickly identify recall problems. And then there was the safe swimming pool drain initiative that she was behind. She got a lot of attention last fall during the Brett Kavanaugh confirmation hearings. The way she kind of held herself and the kind of tone she took to the combative tone of Brett Kavanaugh really stood out. And let's just take a little listen to this. This really brought her to the national profile.
Was there ever a time when you drank so much that you couldn't remember what happened or part of what happened the night before?
No, I remember what happened. And I think you've probably had beers, Senator, and so
you're saying there's never been a case where you drank so much that you didn't remember what happened the night before or part of what happened?
That's, you're asking about, blackout. I don't know. Have you?
Could you answer the question, Judge? That's not happened. Is that your answer?
Yeah, and I'm curious if you have.
I have no drinking problem, Judge.
Yeah, nor do I.
Okay, thank you.
Those high-profile exchanges with Kavanaugh really sort of put Klobuchar on the map nationally for people who might not really have known who she was. Another thing she is known for, and this is going to come up if she does go ahead and run for president, is she's a bit difficult maybe perhaps to work for.
And has
had relatively high turnover in her Senate office. Stephen Smith, your thoughts on any of this?
Well, you know, this is a very difficult time for a senator, a relatively junior senator, even a senator who served a term or two, to make a big mark in Washington. The Congress is so badly polarized and so little is getting done. Only those things that party leaders take the lead on really get much attention. So it's very difficult for Senator Klobuchar or any other senator, especially if you're in the minority party, as she's been here recently, to make a mark. So it's hard to put your name on big, big ticket legislation in this era. So it's not too surprising. If there's a knock on her, is that she hasn't championed a big cause. Now, she might disagree, but, you know, when other Democrats are championing bigger moves on health care, doing something on climate change and so on, she hasn't been associated with those big causes. And I think that's where she may end up finding some problems in the primary season.
So what does she say about her record, though? If you said there are no big legislation that she's taken on, how does she characterize her record?
Well, I think what she would say is that she's done the best she can, in fact, above average for a senator under these difficult circumstances, that she's been stylistically moderate, been willing to work across party lines, and she can point to a few items. But the fact is, she would have a hard time naming a big tax bill, a big health care bill, a big environmental bill that has her name on it.
She's often said that she's good at working across the aisle, and she was close to Senator McCain and Lindsey Graham. In fact, it was 2 years ago, must have been at the inauguration, when Getty, the photo service, had taken a photo of her taking a selfie, and they labeled it a woman in a yellow coat poses with McCain and Bernie Sanders, it was. And she was unknown. Why? Is it just that Kavanaugh hearing and that one moment where she maintained her composure that made her presidential material, or did she have something before then?
Oh, she's really made a mark in Washington, and we may not fully appreciate it here in Minnesota. But in Washington, she's developed a reputation for being very smart, very witty, steady, moderate in style. And all of these things have made her a popular invitee to dinners and other kinds of programs where a junior senator can really make a mark with Washington insiders. She also has a reputation. As Mark mentioned, her vote totals in Minnesota have been noticed. You know, Minnesota's been trending a little bit more in the Republican direction, still a Democratic-leaning state. But statewide races are often won by a Democrat by 3, 4, 5, 6 percentage points. And for her to pick up a nearly 25-point win made a big difference among Washington insiders who are looking for a candidate who can appeal in some of those places where they feel they need to win in 2020.
What do you mean by Washington insiders? Is that other senators or is that people with money and people deciding who the DNC is going to back?
Well, I don't know if it's the DNC so much as it is people with money. Mm-hmm. It's the political talent out there in the world. Who are the advisors going to be? How is she going to construct a campaign staff? Where is she going to get the money? Can she persuade people with money that she's a viable candidate? And she's done a very good job getting connected to those kinds of people.
Mark, you've been following Amy as she's gone on some trips to Iowa. She may not have declared that she's running for president yet, but she's been lurking in Iowa. What have you heard?
Well, I've actually been to Iowa a couple of times with Senator Klobuchar. I was down there in December where she addressed the Iowa Farmers Union. She's very good at working crowds. She's very, very good at naming local notables and propping them up by recognizing them. And that's something that is a really smart thing to do, especially in a state like Iowa, where caucuses are held, not a primary. And I pulled a little excerpt of her talking in Perry, Iowa, in early December to the Farmers Union. And I think it's pretty representative of her folksy approach to communicating with voters. Let's listen to it.
So it is great to be back here. As I've said many times, I can see Iowa from my porch. You pride yourself in a lot of things. You are first, what, in corn and in hogs, in eggs, in caucuses. Minnesota, of course, is first in sweet corn, sugar beets, you may not know this, peas, and turkeys. So please don't make any Minnesota jokes about us being first in turkeys, but we are. Both states are known for our food and our farming and two very strong chapters of the National Farmers Union. But I will tell you, do you know what the most popular spot is at the Minnesota State Fair? Okay, there's one that's really popular that you probably know about. The butter carving, Princess Kay of the Milky Way, kind of like your cow. But the second most popular spot is the Farmers Union booth at the Minnesota State Fair. And that is because there are literally lines of people in line for the mocha on a stick, the frozen mocha on a stick, and the maple press coffee. I mean, they went really cool. And there's all these like Generation Z and millennials waiting in line at the Farmers Union booth. So it's a very cool thing. So I grew up actually in the suburbs of the Twin Cities, but when I was growing up in the 60s, we were actually not that far from Hamel, Minnesota, and the farms. And in fact, I would ride my bike with my best friend, Amy, that was her name too, Amy Sherber, to her family's dairy farm. And if I was really lucky, we got to milk a cow.
That's Senator Klobuchar last month in Perry, Iowa, and you notice, folks, that, you know, she makes a clear connection to her farming kind of connection. She just really is very good at working the room. I did ask her very directly about her presidential campaign, whether she'd be doing that or where she was on it. She has a very canned answer in place. It says she's considering it. She's talking to people and she has no announcement to make just now. But I think a lot of people are looking at her very seriously as a presidential candidate. And we're certainly getting ready for that in the newsroom.
Stephen, how does she compare? There's so many other current senators who are possibly running for president. I mentioned Kamala Harris, but there's also Cory Booker, Kirsten Gillibrand. How does she compare to those peers of hers?
Well, many of them have a reputation for being stronger liberals than Amy Klobuchar. And I think if she has one knock against her among Democratic activists, is that she She, sort of like we were mentioning just a moment ago, hadn't championed any big liberal cause. That makes it a little bit more difficult for her. She also represents a very medium-sized state, and some of her competition, like Gillibrand from New York State or Harris from California, very liberal women, bigger states, a bigger pool of delegates kind of ready-made for them. So she has some disadvantage in carving out a place among the Democratic candidates.
Let's take a call now. Mark in Hugo called 651-227-6000 or 1-800-242-2828. Oh, it's Mitch. I'm sorry I said your name wrong. Hello, Mitch. What's your question or comment?
Yeah, so it's kind of funny. I'm a pretty diehard Republican. Everybody knows me as a pretty conservative person in a house divided with a very liberal wife. And politics are always a contentious topic for us. The other evening we were lamenting the dearth of, decent candidates looking to the, future elections. And I mentioned to her that, I would really get behind Klobuchar. And she's, a huge fan of Klobuchar. And maybe like a Klobuchar-Sinich ticket or something for a nice compromise. But in seriousness, I mean, she brings decorum and dignity to politics. She conducted herself well in the Kavanaugh hearing. I mean, the Kavanaugh hearing, that was kind of sickening to watch, more from the perspective that he's, just a good old, silver spoon, good old boy, getting through. And aside from the Blasey Ford issue, but Klobuchar is just, somebody who seems approachable, realistic, pragmatic, doesn't strike fear in the hearts of conservatives, the more liberal edge.
Her lack of that liberal firebrand is actually a strength for you.
I think it's a huge strength. Okay. She doesn't seem angry. She's not an angry female and an angry feminist. She's just a real person and confident and relatable.
Thanks, Mitch. And Mark.
I'm wondering, Professor Smith, what you make of the juxtaposition of someone like Amy Klobuchar, the tone that she speaks with, to somebody like President Trump, and whether that might actually be a big asset to a Klobuchar for president campaign that would really set her apart from some of the other Democrats we've been talking about, that too, with her abilities to attract support like this Republican from Hugo in Minnesota.
Well, I think it is a real plus. It's frequently mentioned in all of the early summaries of candidates that the media are putting on. They now include her, and they emphasize this stylistic difference between her and the others. I think it'll make a difference. Here's the question. Mm-hmm. If she's not as strongly liberal and doesn't have quite the edge that other strong liberals have on the issue, she may have difficulty appealing to Democratic activists across the country. They dominate the caucus and primary system. On the other hand, Democrats really want to beat President Trump in 2020, and they may be looking for someone like Klobuchar who they think will be a more effective candidate, not so much in the primaries, but in the general election. And you might be just right that she would fit that bill.
And given what you're saying, does she have a better shot in New Hampshire where there's a primary than in Iowa where it's a caucus state?
Well, she's got to do well in one or the other. I'm not sure where she has an advantage. The disadvantage for her in New Hampshire is that there are two other women who are running for the presidency in all likelihood, Elizabeth Warren from neighboring Massachusetts and Kirsten Gillibrand from New York close by, who will have a big edge in New Hampshire. So I think that puts an awful lot of pressure on Klobuchar to do well in Iowa.
Aren't there some states besides Minnesota that are moving from caucuses to primaries? And won't that be helpful for someone like Amy Klobuchar?
In general, yes. But this is a schedule that's been changing in many dimensions. The biggest change is that California has now moved up from June to March 3rd. Mm-hmm. And, of course, Kamala Harris is a popular senator from California. In addition, Texas and Massachusetts have early primaries, March 3rd. So Beto O'Rourke will have a big advantage in Texas. Elizabeth Warren, a big advantage in Massachusetts. And we still have about half the states, including Minnesota, where that date is not yet settled. So actually, I think if Amy Klobuchar is going to make it through to the middle of March, I think she's going to have to do well in Iowa.
Alan in St. Paul called and he said, I fully support Amy. I think she would be awesome, but I hope she doesn't run. I think she'd do so much more in the Senate. And Carrie in St. Paul said, I think her lack of a national platform could be a benefit, less of a chance at being attacked, but we need to pair her with an up-and-comer. Joining me now are Democrat Jeff Blodgett and Republican Alex Conant. Jeff Blodgett is the founding director of Wellstone Action. He was a campaign manager and senior aide to former Senator Paul Wellstone. And he was also the Minnesota State Director for both of President Obama's campaigns. Welcome, Jeff.
Thanks, Stephanie.
Thanks for joining me. Alex Conant is a partner at Firehouse Strategies. He was communications director for Marco Rubio's 2016 presidential campaign, as well as Governor Tim Pawlenty's 2012 presidential campaign. Welcome, Alex.
Thanks for having me.
I want to make sure people know you're a true Minnesotan also.
I am. I grew up in St. Paul.
So, Alex, I'm going to start with you. If she were up against a candidate that you were running, would you be kind of worried?
The short answer is no, at least for running for president. I think she would be an interesting candidate. She's such a strong contrast to what a lot of the other Democrats are trying to do, which is be very passionate, be very liberal, trying to activate the left wing of the Democratic Party. She strikes me as a more sober candidate, and you saw that at the Kavanaugh hearings, where some of the other likely candidates like Cory Booker tried to make a big show of it, where she was just very sober and methodical in her questioning, and I think that actually accrued to her benefit. But I speak from personal experience working for Tim Pawlenty's presidential campaign and then watching Scott Walker's presidential campaign very closely last time around. Midwest politicians really struggle when they run for president for, I think, a couple of reasons. One is they really struggle with fundraising. They don't have the sort of donor base that a candidate from Florida like Marco Rubio did, or the other senators that are likely to run from New York and California. They just have so much more resources at their disposal. And second, I think in Klobuchar's case, it's not clear to me what her message is going to be. She's now starting her third term in the U.S. Senate, but as your previous experts were noting, she's not known for any signature achievements. It's not obvious to me why she would run for president and how her message would be any different than any of the other candidates. And in a very crowded field, you either need to have a lot of money or you need to have a really good message in order to break through.
Jeff, what do you think? What do you hear there?
Well, I think for Democrats looking at 2020, that competition is good, and the more the merrier. And I think Amy Klobuchar offers, one option for Democrats, and should get in the race. I mean, she has a different profile from a number of the other candidates that we're talking about. I mean, she's straightforward voice from the Midwest, and with a lot of dignity and calm forcefulness. She's also optimistic and upbeat and persistent. And so, yes, she's different than some of the other progressives who will be running. I describe her as a progressive who has an orientation about getting things done. And that may or may not be what Democrats are looking for, but it could very well be the perfect antidote to the chaos and corruption of this president, the current president.
Let's go to a call right now. Paul in St. Paul is on the line. Hi, Paul. How are you?
Very good, thank you.
What do you have to say or add to the conversation?
Well, I think with Amy Klobuchar, I think her sharp wit and quick wit, I think, would be extremely good against Trump. And so the combination of her moderate views and moderate tone with that quick wit and be able to make the quick comeback against the guy who's tossing off insults, right and left, would be very effective. And I remember Al Franken used to say that he was very happy to be the second funniest senator from Minnesota. So again, I think that sharp wit is something that will be very valuable to her.
Thanks a lot, Paul. Alex, if she did, let's say she blazed through the field of Democratic contenders and she was the candidate, how would she fare against Trump?
I think she would likely beat Donald Trump. And I try not to underestimate Donald Trump, but I think a lot of the problems that Hillary Clinton had against Trump Klobuchar would not have those problems. I think Klobuchar, as she's done in Minnesota, does a very good job of connecting with blue-collar voters. And certainly her story of growing up in the upper Midwest, I think, would appeal to a lot of the voters that the Democrats just severely underperformed with. And also, I just think that she is about as opposite from Donald Trump as you can get, which I think would probably accrue to her benefit, offering a sharp contrast. That said, it's hard for me to imagine a scenario where she just blazes through the Democratic primary field for the reasons that we just discussed. In part because the Democrats are really, really going to want to beat Donald Trump. And while on paper I think Amy Klobuchar, as I just said, could match up very well with Donald Trump, when Democratic primary voters see the 20-30 candidates on the debate stage, is she really going to be the one that stands out as the obvious anecdote to Donald Trump? That's not obvious to me.
Jeff, I'm going to read something. I hate to put you in this position, but we got to talk about it at some point, and you're both men, but we need to talk about the Hillary Clinton factor and whether people can get behind a Democratic woman, female candidate. And this is what one Iowa voter, who is a woman, told NPR's Asma Khalid. She said, "I think there's a lot of men out there that would never vote for a woman. I hate to say that, but I think that, especially a woman that's strong, very opinionated, I think a lot of men would think she's pushy." Can a woman run right now, or they're kind of up against Hillary Clinton? That's one of our political analysts said. He said, you know, mainly she's in some ways up against Hillary Clinton.
I think absolutely a woman can run and win in 2020. Look at the 2018 election. It was, they call it the year of the woman. There's more women now serving in Congress than any time in history. And I think, was it two-thirds of the challengers who flipped Republican congressional seats were women. So that may continue. I mean, women are making up a very large percentage of the Democratic base, and there's a lot of energy within that base right now. So I think when you think about Hillary Clinton and her campaign, I think there were a lot of issues there. She just was not a very good candidate. It had, some of that may have had to do with gender, but I think some of it had to do with her baggage and her style. And Amy Klobuchar, again, may as Alex said, she may be the exact opposite that of Donald Trump that people are looking for. And, you know, she's relatable. One of your callers said that she is funny. Another caller said that very interesting. She uses stories to get her points across, which I think is very skillful. And she's talked about the idea of confronting Trump with emotion, but positive emotion. And that will be a choice that she'll offer to Democrats. And we'll see what people think of her.
Alex, Mike in St. Paul says Amy's not just friends with Lindsey Graham and John McCain. She went on tour with them in Ukraine. She's hawkish. She's never voted against military spending bills. I wouldn't vote for her. But I was wondering what you think about that. Do you see, as a Republican, is Amy Klobuchar truly somebody that seems bipartisan to you, that reaches across the aisle?
I think as much as anyone in Washington. I worked in the Senate in Marco Rubio's office for about 4 years, and certainly crossed paths with Senator Klobuchar on a number of occasions. And I can also say, as one of your experts was noting earlier, she is one of those senators that shows up around town. If you go to parties and dinners, she's commonly there, which is actually a little unusual for senators. Most senators kind of get out of town the first chance they get. She does a very good job of cultivating relationships within the media and I think with her Republican colleagues, where she's generally well liked within the Senate. That all said, she does not have the signature bipartisan achievement that you might expect she's served in the Senate as long as she has. During immigration reform in 2013, for instance, she was nowhere. She was just not involved in our bipartisan efforts to pass immigration reform, not been very involved in health care reform or tax reform or any of the other big debates of the day where there is potential for some bipartisanship.
Our phone number here is 651-227-6000 or 1-800-242-2828. Dan in Lexington called. Hi, Dan. Thanks for waiting. Welcome to the conversation.
Thank you. I'm a DFL activist. I worked on Amy's first Senate campaign. I've been down to Iowa three times and worked on presidential campaigns, Walter Mondale's back in 1980, Howard Dean's campaign, and Bernie Sanders. And quite frankly, I'm very disappointed in Amy Klobuchar. I think a number of your experts have already said it. I think she's a lightweight. I compare her to Al Franken. When Al was thrown under the bus, she didn't say a word. And as all of your other experts said, she wears her signature legislation after 12 years. Quite frankly, I plan to go down to Iowa this December and next January, and I'm going to be working for Elizabeth Warren.
Okay.
Amy's just too lightweight.
Thanks for calling, Dan. Jeff, Elizabeth Warren has already, you know, she's further into her presidential campaign. She's hired people in Iowa already. She's attracting more money. Does Amy Klobuchar have a chance against someone like Elizabeth Warren?
Sure. I think, again, there's going to be a lot of candidates in the race, and 2019 will be the primary, a chance for the 20 or so candidates to make their case to the broad Democratic electorate, as well as work in a set of states like Iowa, and try to get themselves into the first tier of candidates as you go into the 2020 season of primaries. So she's got a shot, and I think that there's been a lot of talk about her positions on issues and things, and I actually think, I mean, I think she's a solid progressive. You look at her voting record; she also does have major accomplishments, and she's been a strong voice in antitrust conversations, in election integrity recently, and in climate. But I actually think the policy agenda may not be the most important factor. I think there's a strong desire to win amongst Democrats, no question about it. And so I think actually there may be a more of an evaluation about the ability to take on Donald Trump, the ability to win. What's the style and the approach and the temperament and the character of the candidate? I think that may be more of a factor than exactly where you are on every single issue. And if that's the case, I think she's got a strong case to make.
Let's go to Nicholas in Hudson. Hi, Nicholas. What's the view from Wisconsin?
Well, Wisconsin, we were all hyped up over our Scott Walker. He's the man. He's the man. We sent him on to the national stage, and he quickly fizzled out and became irrelevant. So we have to think about that, and I think the Minnesotans should think about that.
Thanks a lot for calling, Nicholas. Alex, putting aside the funding that Midwesterners have a hard time rounding up, are people on the coast and the South and the other places in the U.S. just not interested in Midwesterners for some reason?
I hope not. Being a Midwesterner in D.C. No, I don't think there's any anti-Midwestern bias per se. I do think that Midwestern politicians struggle with a lack of national name ID when they try to enter national politics. And look, running for president is actually a really tough time to introduce yourself to the American people, because you have the press, which is trying to dig up dirt on you. You have oppositions. It's such a competitive environment. There's such little room for error that if you're not already pretty well known nationally, somebody like an Elizabeth Warren or a Joe Biden, sort of the front runners, I think, in the Democratic field currently, if you're somebody that the vast majority of Democratic primary voters have never heard of, it's very hard to introduce yourself at the same time that you're running for president and emerge successfully, at least your first time around. I think that's why Scott Walker failed. I think it's why Tim Pawlenty, who I worked for, failed quickly, because they entered the race, and while they were well known in their home states, they really weren't well known nationally, and it was just too big of a challenge without the resources that you have in a state like New York or California or Florida to both introduce yourself and run a successful campaign.
Sally in Duluth is on the line. Hi, Sally. What did you want to add to the conversation?
Hi. Yeah.
I wanted to add that I think Amy has done some really amazing work on major legislation beyond consumer products and some toys and things. And I'd really love you to discuss her bipartisan work on the opioid epidemic and also combating sex trafficking, because I think these are some major issues that she should be known for nationally.
Jeff, what do you hear?
Well, I think on the major issues that the Senate's confronted in the last 12 years, you'll find that Amy Klobuchar has been right in the mix on that, because she is someone who tries to figure out how to get things done while sticking with her progressive values. And that is different from some of the other senators in Washington, and different from some of the candidates who are running. So, again, she has this get-things-done orientation, and that may or may not be a selling point for Democrats, but I think it's worth her making that case.
Alex, you have worked on presidential campaigns. What appeal do you make to donors that you don't make to the general public? I was just wondering what that conversation is like. If you know, like what Klobuchar is saying to donors versus what she's saying to the people, you know, like in Iowa, that Mark Zedeklik had been out watching, observing, recording, and how is your message to a donor different?
Well, donors really want to win. You know, donors don't want to give money to somebody who has no shot. And so I think what donors are going to want to know from Amy Klobuchar is, what's her pathway to victory? Is it to win Iowa? And if so, how does she win Iowa? How does she put together a team? Who are her advisors? What's her message? What's her pathway to winning the Iowa caucuses? And then even if she does win the Iowa caucuses, how does that position her to win the California primary against Catherine Harris, or to win some of the other big primaries in states that she frankly has absolutely no presence or profile right now? I think that will be a challenge for her, especially given how crowded the field is. I think primary voters, not donors, but just voters, are going to want someone who can beat Donald Trump. I mean, that was certainly true in 2012 when I was working for Tim Pawlenty. And most Republican primary voters then just really wanted somebody that could beat Barack Obama. And after we had a couple of missteps early on, I think most voters decided, Republican primary voters at least decided, that Tim wasn't the right candidate to take on Barack Obama. And after that, we really didn't have any shot. And it's in part why our campaign ended so abruptly. So I think it's two messages. One to the donors is, how do you win the nomination? And to voters is, are you really the best candidate to take on Donald Trump?
One of the things that Amy Klobuchar would probably tell donors and, you know, voters, she's popular. Minnesota is behind her. She won easily. But, Jeff, she's never been in a campaign that was really that tough. Do you think that would be, that this is going to be a hard lesson for her? It's going to be a hard to run for president?
Well, I think it's definitely going to be a learning experience for her. And part of the early nature of presidential primaries now is that it actually allows candidates to grow into the role of being a presidential candidate. And she certainly has to do that, as does pretty much everyone else in the race who hasn't run for president before. I will say, just on the name ID question, remember, I'm not sure exactly what Barack Obama's name ID was this time in 2007, but he came out of nowhere and was a fresh face. And so he didn't have the same kind of standing at the beginning of the race as he did when he actually won. And so I think a fresh face could very well be something people are looking for. And that name ID is a temporary problem that can be taken care of if you can break through, both nationally in a set of states. And on the national thing, you know, more and more people actually are seeking their news and information through national sources. And so I don't think it's just about Iowa or New Hampshire. It's also about whether you can break through in 2019 in the national conversation in a way that she started doing during the Kavanaugh hearings.
All right, Alex, before you go, I want to know, do you think she should run? Should she get in there?
Sure. There's almost no opportunity cost to running for president, especially since she was just reelected. She can use it to raise her national profile. She'll end up guaranteed being on the VP shortlist for whoever the Democrats nominate if she acquits herself well in the presidential campaign. And heck, it you know, positions her to run in 2024 or 2028, depending on how the general election goes. So, yeah, why not?
Thanks for joining us, Alex. Alex Conant is partner at Firehouse Strategies. He was communications director for Marco Rubio's 2016 presidential campaign. He's a native Minnesotan. Really appreciate you joining us, Alex.
Thank you.
Jeff, do you think she should run?
Yeah, I do. I think we should have a lot of choices out there, and she offers something that some of the other candidates don't have. Coming from the Midwest, I think we need a Midwesterner in there. She has a different profile from some of the other women running as well. So if you just look at the – if you look at it from a gender perspective, I think she stands apart from some of the other senators, some of the other women in the race. So absolutely she should run. There's no downside, as Alex said, and plenty of upside for her and for Minnesota.
Jeff Blodgett is the founding director of Wellstone Action. He was a campaign manager, senior aide to former Senator Paul Wellstone. He was also the Minnesota State Director for both of President Obama's campaigns. Thanks for joining us, Jeff.
My pleasure, Stephanie.
All right, Stephen Smith is back. He's a political science professor at Washington University, and Mark Zdechlik has returned also. What did you hear? Mark, why don't we start with you?
I think the final points that Alex and Jeff made are very good points. As she mulls this, there's not some big opportunity cost to getting involved with this. There's not a lot of risk. She's very risk intolerant. We do know that about her. We also know she's a really hard worker, too, who would be able to handle the demands of a presidential campaign. And we were talking before we went on the air, Stephen and I and Jeff, just about opportunities that someone like Klobuchar could run into that could present themselves to her down the road by the fact that she would, you know, engage in a presidential campaign. Stephen, you were talking about this.
Well, yeah. I mean, this is as everyone has said, a no-lose situation. I think she will run. you know, she just got elected, so she's not up for another 6 years. That would be 2024. 2020 is likely to be a good Democratic year. I think that's the way she would see it. The odds of Trump getting reelected are probably less than 50-50. So in 2024, you'd probably have a Democratic president running for reelection. That puts a presidential contest off for her all the way to 2028. And then she's up in her upper 60s, and the number of opportunities at that point gets to be more limited. So I think she makes a run now. The other thing to be observed about this is that only three senators have been elected president directly from the Senate. Most – there have been other senators, but they've gone indirectly, become vice president, served in the cabinet, gone back to serve as a state governor. But you have to have some visibility, and I think she will add to her political capital for some of those other jobs if she does a good job of running for president in the next year or so. So my bet is that she'll make the run, and whether she wins or not, it'll be all plus for her.
Who are the? I'm going to put you on the spot. Who are the people who went directly from the Senate to the presidency? Barack Obama,
Obviously, and John Kennedy, and way back Warren Harding.
Oh, Warren
in
Harding
in 1920.
Sarah in Egan says that she should be a vice presidential candidate. Should be a good balance for someone who would have to win the presidential race against Trump. Do you think what are the skills like? Really quickly that a senator has that can translate to that executive role? Is it, I mean, is that one reason why it's been hard for people to make that leap from senator to the executive, just because they're not really matching?
Well, I'm not sure that it's skill so much as it is reputation. As a governor, a successful governor, especially in a large state, you gain a reputation as a successful executive. You also are not burdened with a voting record, as any member of Congress is. You've already voted on most of the issues that will come up during the campaign. And it's hard for you to fashion a policy platform to meet your needs. A governor can reshape a platform to meet their needs now running for a federal office. There are plenty of senators, though, with executive experience, and certainly Amy Klobuchar will make the case that as a county prosecutor, she managed a very, very large staff, was engaged in management activities, managed a large budget, and that would transfer well to a new job.
Mark, what's coming up next for her?
We don't know. We're just watching and waiting. And I can just tell everybody we're on it and we're watching it. And when she does make a decision, we'll be there.
All right. Thank you so much. Mark Zdechlik is a reporter at NPR News, and he's been following Amy Klobuchar as she goes to Iowa and dips her toes into the presidential campaign. Stephen Smith is a political science professor at Washington University in St. Louis. Thank you to both of you for joining us today.
Absolutely.
You just heard a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. To add your voice to the conversation, you can call in at 651-227-6000 or tweet us at Angela Davis NPR. And if you miss us live, you'll find all of our shows by subscribing to this podcast. You can send us your questions or comments by emailing talk@npr.org.